Hello, and welcome to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, where we give you insights into the mind, brain, behavior, and creativity. Each episode will feature a new guest who will stimulate your mind and give you a greater understanding of yourself, others, and the world we live in. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into human possibility. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. Today's episode of the Psychology Podcast is brought to you by the Casper Mattress Company. Later in the show, we'll hear more about a special offer for our listeners, but you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase right now by visiting www.casper.com/TPP and using the special offer code TPP. That's www.casper.com/TPP and use the special offer code TPP.
Today, I'm really excited to have Dr. Heather Madej on the show. Dr. Madej is a board-certified physician who is passionate about changing the way medicine is practiced in this country. She currently runs the Madej Center for Functional Integrative Medicine in Philadelphia, PA, which focuses on cutting-edge approaches to functional medicine, along with education about healthy eating, exercise stress reduction, and other lifestyle interventions to empower people to live better lives. Thanks for being on the show today, Dr. Madej.
Oh, thanks. And I'm sorry if you
hear your dog. I hear your dog.
Yes. He gets excited.
Well, he can be on the show if he wants.
Thanks for having me. Well, a cat might walk across. You never know. They tend to do that.
You have cat too?
Oh, yeah. I have animals. Love them.
Do you find animals help with your health at all?
I think they do. Absolutely. Well, I mean, I think there's been studies to show that, of course, they help you with your mood, of course. The only thing they do disrupt is your sleep. So that's the one disadvantage of having animals. They tend to do that.
And sleep is a very important, it's obviously very important, but in your own practice, have you come up with any things that you would recommend for people that have trouble sleeping? I thought we could start right there.
Oh gosh, so many. I think a lot of it depends on what's going on with their sleep. You know, I mean, the first thing they have to do, of course, is look at their sort of sleep hygiene. And that's sort of a general thing that people talk about all the time. You know, things like, well, first of all, what's your schedule? Do you have a regular schedule or are you sort of all over the place? Do you, you know, turn off all the electronic devices and things like that before, you know, an hour or two before bed? Because it's known that a lot of those blue spectrum light that comes from TVs and iPads, et cetera, interfere directly with our pineal gland. So it literally shuts down your melatonin production. So it throws off your circadian rhythm. And then, of course, there's all the stuff that you're reading, which is usually like, you know, upsetting news and things like that that really get your mind going. And then a lot of people just, you know, they tend to have stimulants before bed, or maybe they eat too close to bed, or maybe they have alcohol to try to put themselves to sleep. And that usually backfires by interfering with their sleep later on. So, you know, sleep hygiene is like crucial. And if you've got all those ducks in a row, you know, if you're like trying to go to bed at the same time every night and you've made your bedroom your sanctuary and you're still having problems with sleep, then you know, it could be like a myriad of different things. I would say the biggest issue I probably see is blood sugar problems, mostly because when our blood sugar dips during the night, it actually tends to wake us up. And that happens a lot if people don't have really good, you know, blood sugar management throughout the day and the night. So I see quite a bit of that.
That's really interesting. What other things wake us up? Like, does our heart pressure, does our heart beat wake us up?
I think, you know, it potentially can. I wouldn't say generally, though. Again, I think a lot of times it's either medications or things that become stimulants later on. And then, of course, you know, the blood sugar issue. For some people, though, their problem is not waking up in the middle of the night. It's actually going to sleep. And that's a slightly different problem. And it's still insomnia, but that usually comes from, you know, more ruminating on thoughts or having sort of an underlying anxiety and things like that. So, you know, there's different types of difficulty sleeping, you know, sort of sleep onset or problems during the night. Another thing that can actually interfere quite a bit with sleep is hormones. Both in men and women, but particularly in women, they tend to have issues with waking up early, especially sort of like premenopause and in menopause. So that can be a problem too.
Yeah, these are good points. And I do find personally that once I'm asleep, I don't really ever want to wake up. That's true.
You're a lucky guy. A lot of people struggle with sleep. And
No, I'm saying once I fall asleep.
Oh, yeah.
No, sometimes it takes a while.
Yeah. And I mean, and things like that, I think, is linked to just, you know, we're busy and sort of running around and we have a lot going on. And you know, we want to go to sleep, we want to sort of just shut it off. But our body doesn't work that way. We have to sort of like let go of the day and sort of just, you know, relax and fall away. And we get very aggressive about our sleep. Like, we want to fall asleep right now. And that's just not how the human body works. And that's why things like, you know, meditation and body scans and things like that before bed are so helpful, because it literally just sort of like brings your body down like a, you know, very slowly and allows you to just really slowly fall asleep.
Sorry, I just fell asleep. Dr. Mede, you have a very soothing voice.
This seems like a good place to talk about our sponsor for today's episode, the Casper Mattress Company. Casper recently sent over one of their high-quality mattresses to try out, and I think it's a great way to improve one's sleep comfort. The queen-size mattress they sent over was designed by an in-house team of engineers that spent thousands of hours developing the award-winning Casper Sleep Surface. It combines supportive memory foams for a mattress that's got just the right sink and just the right amount of bounce. Plus, its breathable design sleeps cool to help you regulate your temperature through the night. It's delivered in a small how-did-they-do-that-sized box that just shows up on your doorstep. The process eliminates much of the hassle of needing to go to the store and endure the rigmarole of salesmanship, where the store salespeople try to sell you their most expensive mattresses. With over 20,000 reviews and an average of 4.8 stars, it's quickly becoming the internet's favorite mattress. They are designed, developed, and assembled entirely in the USA, and they specialize in delivering the perfect mattress directly to customers, eliminating the commission-driven, inflated prices one sees in traditional mattress stores. They feature free shipping and returns to the US and Canada. You can try their Casper mattress for 100 nights risk-free in your own home, and if you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund your purchase. Casper understands the importance of sleeping on a mattress before you commit, especially considering you're going to spend a third of your life on it. Essentially, it's an incredibly high-quality mattress at a shockingly fair price, with all of the ease of ordering off the internet, and they stand behind their product. Right now, we have a special offer for our listeners of $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting www.casper.com/TPP and using the special offer code TPP. Some terms and conditions apply, and this offer is for the purchase of a mattress in particular. Again, for a really wonderful design and comfortable mattress with a lot of really positive reviews in publications such as the New York Times and Inc. magazine, visit www.casper.com/TPP. and use the special offer code TPP to get $50 toward your purchase of a mattress today. Now back to the show.
So can we back up a second and let's talk about your path into functional medicine before we get into what is functional medicine? I want to back up a second. Now you completed a residency in internal medicine in New York City. I mean, you're a real doctor. you're for real. I mean, you were not completely satisfied. Is that fair to say that with the modern day medical approaches while you were completing that? Did you at least notice?
Yeah. You know, I think residency, of course, is hard for any doctor going through it. It's a tough time. And I think then I just really was on, I had blinders on and I was just trying to make it through the day. And it was hard. It was tough, but it was fulfilling. I think it wasn't until after I completed my residency and my fellowship and I was working, I was actually an allergist, immunologist. That was my fellowship. And it was probably about a few years into that I realized that I wasn't continuing to learn. And I also was not really using a lot of what I sort of learned in medical school. And I also started to see that I wasn't really changing the health outcomes of the people I worked with. I mean, it was sort of a revolving door of giving people medication and putting a Band-Aid on some of the problems that they had. And they would just come back and see me again. And, you know, it just started to get very stagnant and, you know, not what I sort of had expected. So I think that was part of it. And then also there's the whole, you know, how we run medicine these days and the fact that you have to see so many people in an hour and there's so much paperwork and insurance overhead that, you know, it sort of starts to suck the life out of you.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, not personally. I don't, you know, personally never went through that, but that training. But yeah, I totally could believe it. Now, because you practiced 11 years.
I did. Yeah, right. I did.
And you noticed that a lot of your patients were coming in with multiple medical problems and long lists of prescription drugs. And did you feel like there was an opportunity there to be more, as opposed to reactive, to be more, you know, preemptive?
Yeah. And I think I always felt that way. I mean, sort of my own personal interests were always about preventive medicine and nutrition. I would go home and like read about it. I was, you know, very much interested in it, but I just never really brought it into my professional life. And so I started going to conferences while I was still working. I went to some integrative medicine conferences and heard some great speakers who are now, you know, very big in the field, like Mark Hyman and David Perlmutter. Wonderful neurologist. And, you know, when I first heard them speak, I thought, oh my God, well, this is what I believe. This is what I want to be doing. And then I just sort of had to figure out how to get there. And, you know, so it took quite a few years of, you know, sort of behind the scenes, going back to school and doing an integrative medicine fellowship on the side. And, you know, but little by little, I just got all of my training and I wasn't really quite sure what I was going to do with it at first. I thought maybe I could integrate it into what I was doing at the time. But the more and more I realized was, you know, not only did I not want to be just an allergist, I wanted to go back and really look at the whole breadth of medicine, but I couldn't really do the type of medicine I wanted to in the practice I was in. So I had to leave, which was great. It was fine. It worked out wonderfully, but it took a long time and it was scary because I didn't really know what I was doing. You know, I just sort of took the plunge and did it. But yeah.
Well, good for you. I'm appreciative you took the plunge. I should tell people that Dr. Madej is my functional medicine doctor and has saved my life. So
Aww. There
you go. So what is functional medicine? And a follow-up to that is I want to know, is there like a gold standard sort of training program for functional medicine? Is there like a standardized, like there is for, you know, other?
Sure, yeah. So I answer two, you know, those questions. So functional medicine, you know, it doesn't really have like one definition, but I guess some people call it upstream medicine or basically medicine that looks for the cause of diseases rather than just treating the symptoms. So it also does that in a very, you know, 360 degree sort of holistic view. It's very individualized. We look at a lot of in-depth biochemical testing. So it's very much about the person and their experiences and their background and their exposures, their environment, and their genetics. So I guess it's individualized. And also we are trying to figure out why people are sick, like what has been in their life or what have they been exposed to that maybe has affected their genes in a certain way that has then expressed whatever their symptom is, whether it's, you know, an autoimmune disease or depression or, you know, arthritis, et cetera. And then working with behavior changes and, of course, food, nutrition, and really trying to get things back into balance, you know, as functional medicine doctors, we're trying to not only prevent disease, but really try and reverse or at least mitigate, you know, some of the symptoms that people have. It's a wonderful, I think it's really sort of the medicine of the future. I mean, it can be applied to so many different, it can really be applied to everyone, whether you're a relatively healthy person or someone who's chronically ill. So that is sort of my definition of functional medicine. It's not very succinct. And to answer the second part of your question is there are some training programs. Functional medicine is not recognized per se by any board, sort of like, you know, internal medicine is or surgery or whatever. And it was sort of, I guess it was created, I would say, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago, people started studying it. It didn't really have a name at the time. But over the years, it's evolved. And there are some organizations that have training programs. And the one that's sort of the most well-known is the Institute for Functional Medicine. And that's the one that's headed up by Mark Hyman. It's also the institute that has opened up a huge center at the Cleveland Clinic in Cleveland, Ohio. So, you know, it's really getting a lot of attention because of really the effectiveness of it. But their certification program, you have to finish 7 different training modules, and then you have to do a case study and then do a test. You have to be certified. But this is something that's just coming about. It's only a few years old. And so there's many practitioners out there that maybe have been practicing for years and don't quite have that certification yet.
Right.
So you have to really sort of look around and vet your practitioner a little bit and find out what other trainings have they done. I've done a couple of different training programs. So I'm sort of a mishmash of things. But I think over the years, we'll see that it does reach a more standardized, you know, process.
What are the prerequisites? Do you have to be a medical doctor to go into functional medicine?
You actually don't. So what's interesting is you'll
I could be a functional medicine doctor with a PhD in psychology.
You actually could, I think. So you can be what they call a functional medicine practitioner. And there are people, there are nutritionists that are functional medicine practitioners. There's acupuncturists. So, and some people study it and, you know, they just sort of use part of it in their career. You know, obviously you're limited by your licensure and what you can do. As an MD, I can, you know, write prescriptions and order labs and things. A nutritionist, obviously can't do all of those things, but they can still help people tremendously with sort of a functional medicine approach to diet, et cetera. So yeah, it's really something that's open to a lot of different backgrounds. And, you know, you have to understand a lot of the biochemistry, which is sometimes a struggle for people, but it does lend itself to a lot of different areas.
Fascinating. Okay, so let's get into some of the juicy stuff about the kinds of topics that you cover in your practice. One big one, which I know you're an expert on, is gut health. And this is a very hot topic. I mean, I have more advertisements in my Facebook feed just because I clicked once, you know, on regarding gut health. Now I get this doctor and that doctor constantly in my face every day. Now, look, it's hard to sort out what is the good information from the, because there's just so much information coming at me. Can you set the listeners straight a little bit, give them some tips on the connection between gut health and cognition and mood and stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, so, you know, and this is probably something that we've known about for a long time. I think that there was a doctor, I think it's Russian, I think it was Menshikov back in the...
Sounds like a ballet dancer.
Right, exactly. I'm probably totally butchering his name. But he actually said something, and I think David Perlmutter says this in his book, that death begins in the colon. And this is back in like the 1800s. And even Hippocrates had, you know, said something back in the 4th century that, you know, basically health begins in the gut. So this is something, it's not like a new concept, but there's just reams and reams of data over the past, you know, few years relating the health of the digestive system to just about every chronic medical problem. And it's starting to be recognized by, you know, the more the general public. And, you know, of course, modern conventional medicine that the world I grew up in is always about 25 years behind research because unfortunately there's not a lot of thinking outside the box these days, but you know, this is something that we're going to keep seeing. And what we know is that, you know, our digestive tract is not just a place where food goes in and food comes out. Literally it's an endocrine organ. So we make hormones there. We make neurotransmitters, of course, that affect our brain health and brain chemistry and mood. And it's also where a lot of our immune system lies, in this area they call the gut-associated lymphoid tissue. And that's only about one cell layer from our digestive tract. And so you've got all these immune cells that react to whether it's food, infection, toxins, everything that's going through there, having immune responses, causing inflammation, which then set off, you know, sort of problems throughout the body. So there's linkages, of course, to autoimmune disease, cognition, as you said, neurologic issues like Alzheimer's, MS, Parkinson's, and definitely anxiety and depression as well. So it's immensely fascinating. And, you know, I would say in terms of finding good information for people that are interested, I think obviously the Institute for Functional Medicine is a great place to start. You know, if people are interested, of course, lots of different resources that they have to sort of respected physicians. But, you know, you can also, people are really interested, they can do PubMed searches and you can find a lot of, you know, articles that are being written in sort of major medical journals that are now starting to talk about this. So yeah, it is sometimes hard to navigate, you know, what is real and what is not. So, you know, I always tell people try to stick to one or two specialists. And I would say that those, you know, definitely IFM is a good place to start.
You know, I mean, there's so many people, I'm putting doctors in quotes, who market constantly relentless marketing of their five-step plan or their six-step. Right. How come you haven't come up with like a six? You could easily, right? You actually know that, like, you could easily start, be like Dr. Madej's five-step, you know.
Right, thing. Yeah.
Why have you not done that yet?
Well, part of it is that's just not my thing, but.
Not your style, right?
It's not my style. But also, you have to realize that the 5R program, that is not something that these people meet up. That's something that's taught to all functional medicine practitioners, you know, the idea of remove and replace and repair. And
so let's give it away for free. Let's to the listeners. So, tell us some things that you would recommend people do.
Well, so the 5 R's of gut repair, basically, this is what functional medicine docs learn.
Exciting. Okay, here we go.
The first, of course, is remove. And that means remove things that are bad, that, you know, so those would be things like infections, you know, viruses, fungus. I mean, these are things that we look for when we do stool tests. A lot of people have inflammation, but also remove inflammatory foods and also remove, say, you've got an allergy, say like, hey, wheat, right? Gluten. So removal of those things that are problematic. And I'm not going to say these in order, but this is the way I do it. Secondly is repair. I mean, this is where a lot of people get tripped up because they do the removal and then they feel a little bit better, but then, you know, they don't really get better. So you have to get in there and you really have to repair the GI system with certain botanicals and some nutrition and nutraceuticals and things like that. That can be very helpful in, you know, getting that process going. The third would be to, and we call restore. So a lot of times people, their digestion gets so thrown off that they need maybe extra enzymes. They need things to help them with their digestion, maybe some help with production of hydrochloric acid and things like that. So adding those in for a few months or even longer can sometimes be really helpful, just getting people to digest their food again. So let me see, that's three. That would be, then the fourth would be re-inoculate, some people say. So this basically comes down to the microbiome. You know, that's the living, you know, 100 trillion organisms that we have in our body, but specifically the microbes in our gut that do everything from help us absorb food and make vitamins, but also really, you know, direct a lot of different processes. And so making sure that that's balanced, using probiotics, using fermented foods, things like that to get that back on track. And then the last one, which is hard for a lot of people, and that is really to rebalance. And, you know, so, and this is something I struggle with a lot of my clients, is that, you know, we get sick for a reason. We get sick because we live stressed out lives. We sometimes don't eat the best food. We've been exposed to different things. But in order to restore things and rebalance, we have to sleep, right? We have to exercise moderately. We have to de-stress because, you know, cortisol and all those hormones can damage our immune system and damage our gut. So it's not just enough to eat the right things and take some probiotics. You have to work really hard at managing stress and rebalancing your life because that's something that will sort of carry you through. But that's the hardest thing for most people to do.
Thank you so much for going through that. It was very generous of you.
Sure, absolutely.
So it's a whole process and anyone could probably benefit from it, from some of this stuff, even if they aren't suffering yet, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I think that's true. A lot of people think, oh, I don't need to, you know, I don't need to go to a functional medicine practitioner. And, you know, I think that a lot of the people who come to work with me are really just trying to do damage control. They're trying to make sure that, you know, when they're 75, 80 years old, that they have a sharp mind and they feel good and, you know, they know what their risk factors are for different diseases and they're trying to prevent, you know, chronic problems because we all know that wouldn't it be better if you could prevent disease rather than become sick and then be trying to backpedal? So
there are obviously conflicting opinions on that. And I very much, you know, I like data and I want to prevent as long-term as I can, but I see my, I'm going to put mainstream in quotes, you know, doctors, and they are very, very skeptical of functional medicine. And they're skeptical of that approach. Like they'll say like, no, you don't need that test. You don't need that test. You know, it's like, okay, yeah, I don't need it now. Like I constantly am getting, you don't need that. You know, I won't order it for you, you know, like there's no, but it's just a different approach. It really is a different approach. It's one that excites me more. Cause like I said, I'm a scientist. I'm curious. I'm ravenously curious. Maybe there are different like personality traits that are attracted to different to functional medicine. I don't know. Do you think that's true?
Also, you know, I think part of it's the training. After having gone through sort of conventional medicine MD training, you definitely are trained sort of with blinders on. They don't really teach you so much to think creatively anymore, which I think is terribly unfortunate in medicine. Doctors should be creative. I mean, some of the best discoveries came out of people, you know, being creative and thinking outside the box. And, you know, we would never have penicillin or, you know, some of the things that, you know, some of the things that people have created over the years if we weren't doing things that were a little bit off the cuff. So, you know, I think that's unfortunate to be thinking that way. But I also think that, you know, the human body is the most powerful antidote to just about anything that we have. And I think that we have forgotten how incredibly self-healing we can be. And if we can just harness that, it's so, so powerful. And instead, we look to suppressing things with other drugs, which give us side effects. And we forget that we have an amazing arsenal of things in our body that we can use to our benefit. So, you know, I disagree, obviously, wholeheartedly with the conventional approach. And it's not that I'm anti-medication. I think it can be extremely helpful and, you know, wonderful and if it's used judiciously. But also the most important thing is to try to support everybody's own amazing ability to be healthy instead of focusing on, well, let's just wait until you get sick and then, you know, put you on 10 medications. I don't really think that's what anybody ever intended medicine to be. I think if you looked back at the great, you know, thinkers in medicine, you know, they would never think that would be the future, you know, of medicine.
It's a really great point. It's definitely a different approach. And there are probably plenty of doctors practicing in private practice that, well, not probably, there are increasingly a number of them that are now incorporating functional medicine into their internist practice, right? Or into their, you know, family doctors who are taking this on, right?
Yeah. I think the thing is people have this idea, you know, they like to call some doctors quacks. And, you know, I always like to say
that
this
term
is not,
goes way back, right?
Like, it does. Yeah. And, you know, or like, you know, snake oil or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, nothing that I do or I think that functional medicine doctors do, I think is quackery or snake oil. In fact, I think I had to go back and relearn science and medicine when I started along this route because, you know, I look at all these biochemical tests and I'm looking what's going on in the cells of people and genetics and hormone pathways. And, you know, these were things I wasn't ever looking at these before. And most of the treatments that we give are natural, you know, working on diet, working on behavior change, working on stress reduction, working on nutrition, and maybe giving people supplements and things to get them back to where they should be. But it's not all about, you know, throwing people on a million supplements, just like it's not a lot about putting people on medication. So, I mean, I think that, you know, maybe there are some other practitioners out there that are doing some wacky things. I don't, you know, I'm not saying that those people don't exist. But unfortunately, I think, you know, functional medicine gets thrown under the bus and it's not the case at all.
Yeah, thanks for clarifying that. Another thing that I think a lot of medical doctors are skeptical about are supplements. That's another, you know, that's another one that I get whenever they're all telling me, get off supplements. They're not regulated by the FDA. Now, this is what I hear. Can you talk a little about your own personal view on supplements and your experience with your patients and how it may have helped?
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, there's a couple of issues with supplements. Well, the first is the idea that you don't need them, which unfortunately I do a lot of, at looking at what people's, you know, sort of micronutrient or what we call, you know, vitamin and mineral levels are. And some people are just woefully low. Mm. And if you've got nutrient deficiencies, you're going to have problems because we know, you know, of course, everything from vitamin D, vitamin C. I mean, these are all things that we use every day in biochemical processes in our body. So if you're lacking in some of these areas, you're going to have symptoms and problems. And one of the reasons why that is, you know, most people have the so-called standard American diet, devoid of a lot of different nutrients. People certainly don't eat enough, you know, vegetables. They don't get enough of these things, enough antioxidants. But also we live a much more stressful lifestyle, right? Like we're using a lot of this stuff up. We use a tremendous amount of micronutrients for putting out fires, you know, for inflammation, for our immune system to work correctly. So we may also be overusing what we're able to get in through our food. And then there's the other problem with the, you know, issues with our food system, which is a whole other story, but you know, obviously our soil is not as nutrient rich as it used to be. A lot of our food comes from miles and miles away. It gets irradiated. It's been sitting on the shelf for a while. So, you know,
genetically modified.
Yeah. You know, it's so difficult to have like a perfect diet and most people don't. That being said, I do agree that the supplement industry, of course, it is a unregulated industry. I mean, it's not regulated, I would say, by the FDA. So, and there are problems with a lot of supplements out there because it's really on the company to prove that their supplement is good, that it contains what it contains. And so really you have to, again, vet the supplement companies. I am very particular with the ones that I use. I only use companies that have third party oversight. They actually police themselves. They have a, you know, extremely high quality control. One of the companies I use actually puts serial numbers on every single one of the bottles that they put out. They're all free of any, you know, gluten, soy, fillers, you know, and so naturally they're going to be more expensive.
So you're talking about the Zymogen, right?
Yeah. So I use Zymogen products. I use other products too, but that company in particular has been relentless in making sure that it has a pure product. But there are some other great companies as well that I like and also have, you know, they have excellent oversight. I do tell people one thing they can, you know, if they're in the grocery store, you can look for a stamp that says GMP, which just stands for Good Manufacturing Process. And that's sort of a one way to know, you know, do they have some third party oversight? So you definitely have to be a little careful. And as much as you can, you should try to buy directly from the manufacturer, not through a third party, because there is quite a bit of relabeling of different supplements. And so you have to be definitely careful. And in the end, you get what you pay for, because if the raw material is good, it's going to be slightly more expensive.
Yeah.
So
it's a good point. Are there like five particular supplements that you think are like the most essential to living a healthy life? Like,
you know,
if you're on a desert island and you can only pick
five. You know, I think about this a lot, actually.
I bet you do.
I actually do. I would say, well, there's a couple of things that I would say that I put a lot of people on because it tends to be devoid, either devoid in their diet or it is very, very important for health.
Can I try to guess
so
them?
So one right off the bat.
Can I try to guess them?
Okay. So this is five, right? Okay. So I know for three for sure. So yeah, go ahead.
No, let me try to guess one.
Okay.
I'll see if I get it right. I'm only going to do one. Vitamin D.
Yeah. Very good. Yay.
Okay.
So vitamin D3, is, you know, unfortunately we don't spend much time outside anymore, especially if you live in this part of the world, or basically above the equator. You know, our absorption of ultraviolet light is in the winter is almost negligent. So, and vitamin D is something that we create in our bodies. It's technically a hormone. So unless you're drinking or eating fortified vitamin D foods, which many people don't anymore, you know, because a lot of people don't tolerate milk and other dairy products, we don't get a lot of vitamin D, and we see rampant that people are just severely deficient. And it's so important for immunity and mood and, of course, bone strength and health. So vitamin D is the big one. I would say the other one I really push is fish oil. And the reason is that it's almost impossible to get the omega-3 fatty acids in your diet if you don't take it. People just don't eat enough fish for multiple reasons, but it's so important for inflammation and heart health and brain health. So I'm a big fan of omega-3 fatty acids. And then the other is probably a probiotic. And the reason, of course, is because many of us have had lots of steroids in the past or antibiotics that have really affected our gut health. Of course, things like vaccines or other medications. And we don't really ferment our food anymore. So we're not getting this beneficial sort of bacteria, the lactobacillus and bifidobacterium. You know, there's lower rates of breastfeeding, lower rates of vaginal births now. So we aren't really even starting out life with a lot of great, good gut bacteria. So I'm a big fan of people just having a good quality probiotic. So that's three. Those are like my top three.
These are good.
Let's think. What other ones?
Vitamin C? What do you think of vitamin C? Is that kind of like it's nice, but it's like...
Yeah. So vitamin C is great. I think you can get by without it as long as you're fairly healthy and as long as you're eating plenty of vitamin C containing foods. It's fairly easy to get that as long as you're eating lots of fruits and vegetables. You know, of course, like red peppers, strawberries, kiwis. You can look up the list of what, you know, basically you get vitamin C in and you'll see quite a bit. So I would have to say the thing that I will say what I am seeing more and more are problems with B vitamins. And so I do often advocate people taking a B complex. And I think part of it is because, again, we use B vitamins in detoxification. We use it in chronic stress. We just blow through our B vitamins. And if you're exposed to any toxins, like if you drink alcohol or if you're exposed to any chemicals in food, we tend to get low. And so when I do a lot of my nutrient testing, I see a ton of B vitamin deficiencies. So that's a good thing, I think, to have in your arsenal. You may not need to take it every day. There are some people who do need extra B vitamins for different genetic issues. But so those, I think, are all pretty important.
So that was that three?
Well, that was technically five because you added vitamin C in.
Oh, wait. I'm sorry. Okay. I'm only thinking four. It's the B vitamins, the D.
So the fish oil, the fish D. Oil.
Yeah.
The probiotic.
Oh, the probiotic.
Yes.
And
then the C and the B, yes.
Okay, what about, something really hot right now is ubiquinol.
Mm-hmm. Ubiquinol.
Now, would you put that as like in the top 10?
Well, I would put it in the top 10, especially as we get older. Okay. So we create ubiquinol, or what, you know, is more commonly known as CoQ10. Ubiquinol is actually a slightly different version, more highly absorbable. But for people to understand what CoQ10 is, basically we create it, but we use it every time our cell makes energy, which is all the time, right? So when we're making energy in our cells, it's sort of like a furnace that also creates a lot of free radicals along with making the energy. But those free radicals can go back and actually damage our own cells. So we need things to dampen that issue. And those are the antioxidants. Those are C and E, but CoQ10 is very particular in that it dampens this free radical damage. It's particularly important for people who have heart problems, any brain issues, or any chronic fatigue, because those, you know, little cells, or I mean batteries inside our cells, which are called mitochondria, are most richly found in our heart, our brain, and our skeletal muscles. So, you know, I use CoQ10 quite a bit. The other thing is that a lot of medications deplete it, the most common being the statin drugs or the cholesterol drugs. So statin drugs actually compete for CoQ10. And so if people take a statin, I say everyone on a statin should be on CoQ10. And I don't own any stock in CoQ10 companies, but you know, I think it's a quarter of the United States takes a statin. So this is a big issue, because once you deplete that CoQ10, you can start having fatigue, you can have damage to the cells, and people can get muscle pain, et cetera. So it is a pretty important thing to have on hand.
Cool. And ubiquinol is better than just CoQ10.
It is. It is. It's just it's a highly absorbable form. So.
Well, I've learned a lot from you, obviously.
Yeah, no. Well, I've learned a lot from you. So.
Aw. So, you know, another thing you really do in your practice is detox. You know a lot about detox. And do you recommend any particular supplements or things, programs to kind of maybe even like every day if you want to make sure that your liver is good detoxification?
Right.
Milk thistle or something?
Yeah. So there's, you know, the thing about detoxification that people don't really understand is that it's not something we just sort of do occasionally. It's something that we're constantly, you know, doing 24/7. I mean, everything that comes through our body, including the things that we make, you know, like our own hormones, including things that we're getting rid of, like, you know, old blood cells, or if we're, you know, we're constantly killing parasites and viruses and bacteria. You know, all of these things are considered waste to our body. And then, of course, there's all the toxins that we breathe and eat and drink. And, you know, over time, that can be a huge burden on our detoxification organs, which, of course, include our liver, gallbladder, if you have one, your gut, kidneys. So really, there are multiple steps in detoxification, way too complicated to get into, but there's certain things that are sort of crucial to happen. And if you're low in certain nutrients, you're going to have a harder time. So just generally, obviously, you know, you want to cut down on toxins, right? I mean, that's detoxing itself, right? But there's several things that are really important. One is cruciferous vegetables. So, you know, through diet, we use a lot of sulfur, actually, as part of the detox process. It creates some of the most important things we need. And so, you know, things like broccoli and things like cabbage and all those sorts of things.
Kale.
Really, really, really important. Kale, just really amazing. These are so, so, so important for detoxification. So that's why you'll see a lot of times those will be in products, or people will make these shakes with green, you know, all these green vegetables in there. So that's one thing you can get from nature. And then the other thing, there's, again, these are related to sulfur, but there is something called glutathione, which is it's sort of the major antioxidant detoxifying chemical. And it's made up of a sulfur molecule, which we often call it, it's called cysteine. So you can take glutathione, you can also take N-acetylcysteine, or NAC is what we call it, to help, you know, sort of help our body regenerate that glutathione so that we have enough, we don't run out of it. Now, you mentioned milk thistle, which it's also called silymarin, which is the botanical name. And, you know, obviously this is a very safe thing to use. It's been around forever, but that particularly is a liver protectant. And so you can take that on a daily basis, and there's absolutely no harm to doing that. And that's also very helpful, especially if you tend to, you know, drink any alcohol, take anything like Tylenol, if you, you know, or if you're exposed to a lot of toxins. So there's a lot of things you can do there. And of course, the B vitamins are crucial as well, you know. So there's lots of things you can do with detox. Also, just making sure that your GI tract is working. You know, people are chronically constipated in this country. So if you're not moving the waste out, you're not getting the toxins out. That's how we get them out. So that's just, you know, really loss of fiber, loss of soluble fiber is really helpful. And it's amazing when people start doing this, they feel lighter, their brain feels better, because those toxins, when they're not being removed from the body, they're just going to either sit in tissue or they're going to recirculate in our bloodstream and really start to affect our health.
Well, that's really, really quite interesting. Look, I really thank you for talking with me today. I think that, you know, you've really touched on the importance of the mind-body connection and how these physical aspects really do influence our mood, anxiety, and things of that nature. And I just really appreciate the work you're doing.
Sure. Well, it's been great, Scott. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on and talk with you.
Anytime, Dr. Madej. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. Bye now.
Again, this episode was sponsored by the Casper Mattress Company. Get $50 towards any mattress purchase right now by visiting www.casper.com/TPP and using the special offer code TPP. That's www.casper.com/TPP and use the special offer code TPP. Thanks for listening to the Psychology Podcast with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman. I hope you found this episode just as thought-provoking and interesting as I did. If you'd like to read the show notes for this episode or hear past episodes, you can visit thepsychologypodcast.com.